Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this post-Thanksgiving Monday. It is Cyber Monday, so you can only imagine that computer shopping will be featured on the Business Lunch on this afternoon. But first, we're going to talk to the boys from Chicago Inno, as we do from time to time. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are here. Welcome to the both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Sure, you bet. Pull that microphone a little bit closer to you there, Will. You should be a veteran at this by now.
I know.
How was
Cyber
Thanksgiving?
Monday.
You're all typed out.
Is that I know, that's it.
All right, so let's start because, you know, we've been having this off-air conversation. The people who created Cards Against Humanity, kind of against all odds, have become this family success. I mean, you know, my wife and I are talking about whether the kid we were buying it for their kids this year and all. So they did this thing on Friday, which was phenomenal to me. They offered to sell nothing to someone for $5.
Yep.
And how did it go?
It went really well. They're the best. They've created this hilarious, simple, kind of beautiful in how simple it is game, created by some Northwestern students. So it's a Chicago product, headquartered here in Chicago, great Chicago company. And yeah, they pulled their entire online store down and replaced it with a checkout cart that said, give us $5 and we will give you nothing in return. Nothing. We're not going to send you anything. And they made $71,000.
So, in just one day.
And that's $5 at a time.
That's $5 at a time. And they said multiple people bought multiple loads of nothing.
It's 1,200. 1,200 people bought more than one nothing.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? What was great, and then they posted a hilarious list of all of the things that they spent with it. They're like, oh, we just got $71,000 for selling nothing. Here's what our staff bought. But what I think is really interesting about it is, one, it's a testament to what a great brand Cards Against Humanity is. No one was fooled.
So this is goodwill spending in a way.
Exactly. This is, hey, I love this brand. This is really funny. You know, that you get an email from them like, yeah, I'm going to support this brand's quirks and whimsy, and it's just a sign of the connection they must have with their consumers. The other thing is, we're crazy. Like, consumers are nuts coming Black Friday, right? Like, there was over 8.3 billion spent online. 70,000 of it went to nothing. So yeah, you know, like Cards Against Humanity.
I got
just
news for you, buddy. A lot more than 70,000
went
to nothing. Yeah. All right, so we've got that, and the Cards Against Humanity is, well, I've never played it. I've never seen it. So let me describe it for you.
Yes.
Sort of an incredibly vulgar, hilarious board game that presents very embarrassing situations to the card holders.
Yeah, they have cards with standard questions and statements, and then they have cards with incredibly inappropriate terms or just normal terms that when put in context are inappropriate.
And so here they are with all of this, and they've created great goodwill.
Yes.
Fun guys. And now they're coming out with a game. They're trying to raise money for a game. Jim, what's the name of the game?
Yeah, so the game is Secret Hitler, and it's actually a spinoff from one of the founders of Cards Against Humanity. So Max Temkin is getting this game started on Kickstarter, just launched it a few days ago.
Will and I are giggling because we're the three of us talking off the air.
Can
we talk about
it? Served it up. Like, what's the name of this, Jim? Yeah, why don't you say it so you can get in trouble?
It's icky to talk about Secret Hitler. So again, Jim, what's the name of the game?
So Secret Hitler is the name of the game.
And so, is this going to test this goodwill?
So, I mean, Cards Against Humanity sort of brands itself as the card game for horrible people. And so I think it sort of goes along those lines with Secret Hitler here. And it's really interesting. I mean, it's created from one of the founders of Cards Against Humanity. It's raised over $300,000 in just a few days on Kickstarter. So it's got a lot of people who are interested in it and seeing what's next from sort of the minds from Cards Against Humanity. But basically, the objective is the game's for 5 to 10 people, broken into two teams, the liberals and the fascists. The liberals want to pass liberal policies and assassinate the secret Hitler, who they don't know it's on the other team. Yes, somebody gets assigned to secret Hitler. And then the fascist team is trying to pass 6 fascist policies or elect secret Hitler to chancellor. So sort of ridiculous, but another great game for a group of people getting together over a couple of beers, maybe over the holidays.
Yeah, and one thing to note about Cards Against Humanity, yes, their brand, the product is the game for horrible people, but these are not horrible people. No. Cards Against Humanity is one of the most generous young companies in Chicago. They've given over $4 million to organizations and nonprofits that they support. They have an in-house incubator where they bring in indie game makers that they admire, and they give them the resources and space to support like indie game development in the city of Chicago. They host events at their space. So like, yeah, they're making this game for horrible people while being like really lovely people.
Well, right. And so what they're telling us is we've all got a little bit of horrible in us, probably.
Sure, yeah. Totally.
I want to talk about Shift Gig, but before we do, very quickly, it's Cyber Monday, and you know, Groupon is just getting ripped on all the time, but there's some good news about Groupon this week.
Yeah, a study from Wallet Hub, which is a personal finance website, did a sort of a survey on the best retailers for Cyber Monday and found that Groupon was number one. They are offering the biggest discounts at 62% across their site-wide. So Groupon, the site for deals in Chicago, is really the best deal for a Cyber Monday.
So it's not like shopping at your neighborhood store, but it's still a local company.
Yeah.
Stop by Groupon. Okay, Shift Gig. I think Will or Jim, one of you described it as Uber for wait staff in a way.
Yeah, kind of. It's sort of on-demand jobs. Mm-hmm. So basically it's a platform both for employers and employees. Employers looking to fill some last-minute jobs and employees looking to kind of get work at the last minute. So it's across a number of different industries: bartenders, servers, hotel staff, even
warehouse,
promo models.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically if you got a, you know, hand modeling gig that you want at the last minute, take a look at Shift Gig.
Yeah, it's a marketplace for part-time gig, and it's done really well. Another Chicago company that's grown super fast. They just raised $22 million in Series B. A lot of that money coming from Chicago investors. So we love mentioning that, Steve, every time we're on.
Right.
When Chicago Capital supporting Chicago startups.
So this isn't so much like, oh, I've got a catering gig tonight and I'm short three wait staff. This is more like, I need wait staff. Here's some people who might be able to do the job. More long-term sort of thing.
Yeah, well, it's on-demand, so it's basically short-term. So what you need. So if and the employer needs someone for the holidays, you can find that. Or if it's someone for Saturday, it can be as on-demand as tomorrow night.
I need one person to fill a desk every Wednesday, or I need someone right now for 2 hours. It really is sitting in that suite. It's like the LinkedIn for part-time, short-time gigs.
Pretty cool. And this is Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke from Inno Chicago. Chicago Inno, which is kind of like the car talk for tech, right?
That's right.
People can subscribe to your daily email. How do they do that?
Check us out, Chicago Inno, and click the newsletter tab at the top, and you'll get The Beat, which is the name of our daily newsletter, every day.
Chicago Inno. I always reverse that, and two of my favorite guys. I'm sorry, Jim, one more time. What was the name of that game?
Secret Hitler.
Thanks very much. Good to see you guys. It's 12:23 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here on this Monday afternoon. It is a Cyber Monday. Are you spending away? Maybe this is not a great time to talk about saving for retirement, or maybe it is. Maybe these days are the ones you spend maybe more than you need to, and sacrificing your 401k or your nest egg. I don't know. Peter Dubois is here. He is a portfolio management director, vice president, a wealth advisor at Morgan Stanley. And more important than that, Peter Dubois is a friend of mine, and it's wonderful to have you in the studio. Pete, welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. So, you know, we talk about this a lot, and the idea is I'm very good at homework or goal. If you tell me this is what you need to do to retire, this is what you need to save, it's easier to sort of get your arms around. But the problem is, how do you figure out where you need to be, where your number is? Because I would imagine there's not one number for everybody.
Steve, it's a great question. And if you step back and think about it, a lot has changed since our parents or grandparents retired. People are living longer. Interest rates have come down dramatically. Employer-sponsored pension plans are almost extinct. And now the employee's responsible for saving their own money. And now, the most popular, as you mentioned, are 401k plans. And the most important thing is get an early start. Start right out of college or as soon as you can and put money in. And these plans are automated. So every month, a little bit goes into your savings.
Okay, so I've been doing that. But how do I figure out that I need, you know, $500,000 or $1.5 million or $3 million? How do I figure out what I can comfortably, because I want to retire as soon as I can. I want to retire yesterday, Peter, so I can spend more time with you.
But this is so much fun down here, Steve. Well, the answer, it's different for each person that's out there. If you're living in a rural area, your cost of living is going to be much different than in a major metropolitan area, and everyone has different lifestyles and hobbies. You know, so, you know, but there are tools that you can use. So, whether you want to go through an extensive financial planning program where you can use some new software models that allow you to input what your life expenses right. are, like college.
So there's something like TurboTax? I mean, not TurboTax.
There's TurboTax for financial planning. So okay. you can model all your future expenses, look at your income, and determine a likelihood of what type of likelihood your scenario will come out.
Is it fair to say that my expenses will be less when I retire, or is that sort of a naive thing to think about?
On average, they say your expenses are about 70 or 80% of what you are when you're working.
Because I'm what? I'm not paying to commute. I'm not paying for a business wardrobe. I'm just going to seat on the couch.
This is you know, for you it could be the couch, but these are just statistics. But as you sit here today, if you don't have time to go through and hire someone to help you with a plan, you can. There's a rule called 72, which means your money will double
okay.
every 10 years okay. if you average 7.2% or 7.2% a year. So if you
7.2% growth
per year.
Not contribution, but growth.
Just,
okay,
yeah.
okay.
So if your money doubles every 10 years, if you're 40 now and you have $250,000 saved up, at 50, you have $500,000. At 60, it's worth $1 million.
Okay.
Now let's say if your expenses in retirement are $50,000 a year and you can get 25 from Social Security, then your portfolio has to generate 2.5% a year of income to you to make up the difference.
Of course, the problem is we went through a period starting in about 2007, right, where that theory of 72, of rule of 72, was out the window.
It is very much out the window. So I think really there's so many uncertainties out there. We're barraged by bad news every day, and all you can do is worry. So what's an investor to do, and what I like to do, is focus on what you can control.
Okay. Yeah, I like this about tell them about what you focus on, what you can control. What do you mean by that?
So, you know, so if you look at your expenses today, you know, a mortgage is a great example. If you have a $2,000 a month mortgage and you come up with the system so it's paid off by the time you retire, you reduced your expenses by $24,000 a year once you get to retirement. So if you focus on all these things that could be future expenses and take care of them while you still have an income, then I think your probability for a successful outcome is greatly increased.
So we don't know what healthcare costs might be. We don't know what family situations might be. But we do know that we've got this mortgage or this car payment. And one way to create a little certainty is to get rid of as much of that as possible.
That is correct.
Peter Dubois, a portfolio management director, vice president at Morgan Stanley. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me today, Steve.
Tomorrow, I think it is Giving Tuesday. We're going to talk about how to find the best charity for your buck. And also, have you heard about charity gift cards? That's right around the corner on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's 12:37. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Monday afternoon. It is a Cyber Monday. Tomorrow's Giving Tuesday. And thank God Wednesday, we've got no name for it.
Wonky Wednesday.
Lisa Dietland is here. She is the president and CEO of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Well, what is that anyway?
It's a resource and training center for nonprofits and individuals who want to do philanthropy better. Most people I talk to say, you know, Lisa, I really want to make a difference. And when I give my money, all I get is a receipt. I never hear what really happened. Right. It feels like a transaction, not a transformation. I want to make something better. And so the Institute works to help people and nonprofits do philanthropy better.
So Lisa, I've learned, is nothing if not organized, because she has wonderfully buried me with a lot of data and information, and a lot of it jumped out at me. But the thing that really did is this idea that in the last 40 years, adjusted for inflation, giving has grown by 200%.
Yeah.
So that means we are giving 200% more now than they did in 1970.
Correct.
That's amazing. It's surprising to me.
Well, there's also been an explosion, Steve, of nonprofit organizations. As little as 20 years ago, think about the late 1990s. Hard to believe that was 20 years ago. There were only about 650 to 700,000 nonprofit organizations. That means registered with the IRS. Today, there's 1.6 million. And what that shows is that the government has shortfalled, you know, the budgets. I mean, look, we're here in Illinois and we don't have a budget. And somebody's got to make sure the hungry get fed, that people have a place to sleep, that books get put on library bookshelves, that, you know, activities for seniors exist. And that's where the nonprofit
comes in. Well, I don't want to do, there's no need to do the political talk here, but, you know, one of the
that's
things,
later.
Well, but they, you know, often when it comes time to cut government programs or things, they say, we'll rely on charities. Mm-hmm. Charities used to pick that up.
Correct.
Okay. And that, you know, made some logical sense to me. But now I find out that we're giving 200% more now than we did when presumably charities were picking that up.
Correct. That's, correct. Well, because there's more, I guess there's less that government's picking up, and there's an increased need. I worked for a long time at public universities, and it used to be that you got to go to a public university for a relatively low amount of tuition because the state legislature provided funding. Now we call it, you know, we used to say state assisted, state supported. Now we say state life support, you know, because, you know, like in Colorado, it's 8% of the budget, the state universities. So somebody's got to make that up if we're not going to put it on the backs of the students and tuition.
All right, so here we are, perfect storm time, because we've got tax time coming.
Correct.
And we've got, you know, tug at your heart holidays coming. So people get a lot of charitable requests at this time of year. Mm-hmm. I want to move on to the couple of the catalogs and the gift cards, which I think are brilliant. But before that, just rule of thumb, when you get something in the mail, how do you know whether it's worth your investment?
Well, at first glance, at the outside of the envelope, you don't. You know, I received four appeals over the weekend, and I was like, okay, they go in my pile. So first of all, I say to my clients and to friends, don't, you know, automatically write a check. Set it aside and think about, what did you do last year? What's really important to you this year? And then come up with a budget and a plan of action. Sometimes things happen in our family. Somebody gets breast cancer, kidney disease, adopts a child, and all of a sudden that becomes a cause we care about. So think about what's really important. And it's okay to say no. It's okay to say, this was important last year,
It's almost a requirement to say no, really, because there are so many. Tell me about the idea of these charity catalogs, because this is a great way to get money to something you care about and buy a gift as well.
Absolutely. So there's two different ways to do this. A lot of organizations now have charity gift catalogs, and you can find them online if you're not getting them in the mail. The one that everyone knows is Heifer International, of course. You know, where can I really buy a cow? Can I really buy a flock of geese? And the answer is yes, you absolutely can. You know, you can buy a pig, a sheep, a cow for, you know, $120. And it goes to a family in a third world or developing country. And here's what's the kicker, Steve, is that they then can, you know, sell the milk or the eggs, or and it keeps going on and on. They can have a little micro enterprise and make their life better in that country and where they're living. The other is, there's a lot of catalogs that actually support micro enterprise. So you think about UNICEF, the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. Like, the Women of the Maasai make bracelets, and they're in that catalog. So you can actually buy a bracelet that's helping a micro enterprise back in a third world or developing country.
And that's not being filtered through so many hands?
Nope, it's not. And then you actually have a gift to give somebody under the tree, because a lot of people want to open that box.
Sure.
You know, we were talking, you know, off commercial about, you know, when people say, I made a gift in your name, and, you know, what's the feeling you get? And do you get a good feeling or a bad feeling? But the thought is, there are actually gifts, you know, candles, things made by the women in Nepal, that you could actually purchase and give to someone.
I like that. So then you're helping someone, and it's concrete too, because you
correct.
Can, and when someone opens it, you can make them feel good about you, because you're a charity.
Okay. Well, you've helped, and usually there's a little note where it came from, or
so
what
really,
have you.
So it is my pet peeve. I don't want, well, I shouldn't say it that way.
No, that's okay.
I never am very excited when someone tells me they're giving to a charity in my name.
Yeah.
Because I just feel...
Well, is it the Human Fund, the Seinfeld episode, you know, well, where George really didn't do it, but he told everybody he did.
Do it, right. Well, I think they're probably doing it.
Right.
But I also feel like, okay, really, you're just helping your tax bill by giving a tax deduction, right. You know, and pretending it's a gift for me, or what's
and
the
I don't
charity?
Care about that cause.
Or doggone it, I really like those chocolate covered almonds that you give me every year. So what's it going to hurt? Really, so I never really liked that, and now I read from you this idea of a charity gift card. Mm-hmm. Which I love. Explain that for me.
Well, you know, just much like the department store gift cards that you can purchase for a set amount of money and give to someone that they can use in that department store, you can do the same thing with charity. It's called the JustGive.org, the Just Give card. And it has been around for about 15, 16 years.
Is that
it's
right?
Legitimate. Yeah, since the early 2000s, it's been around. And you purchase the gift card in any amount of money and you give it to someone, and that person, the recipient, can actually donate those dollars to whatever charity they want. Recently, all charities, my research has shown all charities accept the charity gift card. When it started out, it was just a few, and then it got to be 100,000. But now, all 1.6 million registered charities in this country, it is reported, receive that charity gift card. So actually, the person gets to open a gift under the tree. It's a gift card, but they get to pick the charity they want it to go to.
Well, I mean, I like that for anyone, but especially nice for kids.
Yeah.
You know, give the kids 25 bucks or something, and then they
teach them
and they find the charity, and
absolutely,
then they've got a little bit something invested in that too.
And you know what I would also encourage is for them to have a point in time when you talk about it. You know, if you decide to do this with your family and your children, perhaps you say you have the month of January to figure this out, and in February, because you loved the organization you gave to, on Valentine's Day, let's talk about the organization. And you know, have them talk a little bit about why they chose the charity they chose and what research they did and the impact they're hoping they had with it.
What a nice thing. Go visit the charity. Do whatever you'd like that way.
Absolutely.
Lisa Dietland is the president and CEO at the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy, and you just transformed me a little bit.
Oh, thank you. I love that.
Thanks for coming in. I hope we can do it again.
Hope so, too.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion Samuelson, Dolly McCarthy, and Kim Gordon, as we keep our eyes on all of that. All right, O might like the brick and mortar, and I get that, but it is Cyber Monday. Adobe keeps track of the sales, and the last numbers I have are, they're almost 4 hours old now, but from midnight through 9 o'clock our time, 50 million cyber visits at 4,500 U.S. retail sites, $500 million in sales, that was as of 9 o'clock, a discount average of 23%. And they say that 15 out of every 100 requests for a product gets a response that it is out of stock. Lars Perner looks at all of that for a living. He is an assistant professor of clinical marketing at the USC Marshall School of Business, and he joins us on a phone line now. Professor, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Well, thanks for having me.
You know, I think that as we talk about this year more than ever, I feel like we're sort of living in the past. You know, there's so much talk about Black Friday and shopping on Black Friday, and now it's Cyber Monday. But the fact is that those days maybe don't even really exist anymore, at least not the way they used to. We've sort of melded everything together.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically Black November by now. We really had a major growth last year in the online sales and the pre-Thanksgiving sales. And one of the problems is that you have to try to undo or one-up what your competitors did last year and what you did last year. So it's almost like a bit of a game of chicken here. And a lot of the sales started kicking in very early.
And this is the 10th Cyber Monday. 10 years ago, when we had Cyber Monday, there was a reason why we had it on a Monday, because we went to work and used our boss's computers.
Yeah, so back in those days, a lot of people didn't actually have internet access at home, and many people who did were confined to relatively slow dial-up service. So that made browsing a lot more difficult, especially if you're looking at photos that take some bandwidth. So that was why we had Cyber Monday in the early days to take advantage of the better facilities that people would have once they got back to work.
And it seems as if when it started, or at least a few years ago, you were doing one or the other. And, you know, look, I bought online, I think it was Friday. It might have been Thursday, Professor, but don't tell anyone. I think it was Friday. I was looking online for an overcoat that I wanted. And my idea was I'm going to go to the store. to the chain that I was shopping at and look at it, try to buy it, and then buy it online. Well, as it turns out, they didn't have anything close to what I wanted online, so or in the store. So I ended up buying it online. My point is that I was using both resources to buy my product.
Yes, that's correct. It's actually a very common practice for many retailers to carry a greater assortment of merchandise online because you can use a national distribution center or at least some regional ones to hold that inventory so you don't have to stock that at every retail location. That makes it possible to carry a lot more different sizes and different combinations of items online than it does in retail stores.
All right, so Adobe says they're going to see $3 billion in sales today. I mean, what are you seeing? How does that compare? Is Cyber Monday sort of losing its punch?
Well, I think that Cyber Monday, especially when the recession started several years ago, really was an excuse to have an additional round of sales, and that's held for a while. What's happened now is that the online buying season has become much more diffuse. There's been a lot of backlash against many of the brick-and-mortar retailers that would be open on Thanksgiving Day itself. So then it's much more attractive often to have the sales online. You're not making nearly as many people work that day. A lot of people get bored on Thanksgiving Day. It may also be a little bit of a relief valve if you're dealing with relatives. There can be a lot of emotionally charged things that come out one way or the other in a day like that. So, of course, there have been a lot of continuing sales over the weekend. This is really a matter of scooping your competitors. If they bought from you before Cyber Monday, then they won't be as available for your competitors. So you really need to jump the gun. Sometimes you can give some of your select customers an advantage to come on early. I know that Amazon gives the Amazon Prime members advance access to some of the sales. So, again, we've had a lot of online sales that have happened already, and I think that some of the retailers are actually now essentially referring to Cyber Week as opposed to just Cyber Monday continuing the sales.
And that's kind of my point. I think it's all sort of melding into one individual meeting or meaning is disappearing. The National Retail Federation has numbers that said more people shopped online over the four-day weekend than went to stores. Now, Orion Samuelson, our business reporter here, said something, and I want to just very quickly get your response to it, because he said, look, I still want to go places where the local workers are benefiting, where the tax dollars are going to my schools and stuff, and which is a great sentiment, but it's not one I hear that much anymore. Is there any sort of loyalty to the corner chain store as opposed to the online chain shop?
I suspect that in most large suburban and urban communities, there's probably less loyalty. You may find more loyalty in smaller communities where the boundaries are more clearly marked. I'm not so sure with the way that many urban and suburban areas essentially are merging into one that you see as much local interest. It, of course, depends a bit on your connections. If you know somebody in retail who's been laid off or
right.
having difficulty making ends meet, then it becomes more significant to you. But I think that's the exception rather than the rule.
Lars Perner from the USC Marshall School of Business. Professor Perner, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720.